Guesstimation question.
Yes.
How many Philips are registered for AOM 2023?
It's an amazing question. 350.
Three? Okay, good. That's logged. Good to know. Of course, there's only one Alexander registered. So as is tradition by now, we are today at the AOM annual meeting 2023 in Boston. And with me today is...
Philip.
Yep, and that's it. Philip and me, Philip and Alexander. And today we thought we'd want to talk a little bit about how conferences have changed for us, because we tend to do this at these conference, at these conference recordings. And towards the end, you can also skip to that if you don't want to hear us talk. There'll be a little bit of input from people that actually know what they're talking about. So we've got a few snippets from Imke Reimers, from Gordon Birch, and from Frank Nagel, who will share their impressions on what they think that juniors can do in conferences. But now the most important input, Philip. Most important question.
Yes.
What still tends to grind your gears? What do you still not like about conferences?
ACs, actually.
Yes.
It's crazy how cold these rooms are.
Yeah.
I'm having a cold and it's getting worse. So I'm sorry for my nasal talking. What's bad about conferences? I think it's very hard to have good conversations that are really topic focused, or to find new people who are interested in what you do, because this conference is so broad that I sometimes struggle to find like really interesting conversations. It's more sharing. That's what I do. That's what you do. Rather than, yeah, we both work on the same topic. Let's discuss this and in depth. I think this just a nature of this conference, because it's just the largest in the field with, I think, 10,000 people or something like that.
I must be something like that. I think that is the numbers, at least before the whole pandemic that happened. That's a good point. I think similar to yours is, so you get the suggestion to talk to seniors a lot, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's extremely frustrating to try and talk to seniors at conferences.
Yeah.
Because they are open to talk to you, but they're open to talk to everybody. And
yeah.
I have had some extremely rude situations where I'm in
talks.
Is
that the case?
At least in my I've had a few cases where I'm talking to someone that I've been wanting to talk to for a while.
Yeah.
And I finally get a hold of them.
Yeah, and someone jumps in.
Yeah, like not even like saying, hey.
Yeah.
No, just like literally walk in. Say, oh,
just
hey.
Moving in front of you slowly.
Like literally just like in the middle of what I'm saying, like, I'm sorry. Hey, it's so nice meeting you. And then, of course, as a senior, you're not going to say, sorry, Mr. Colleague, that I know better than this guy.
Yeah.
I'm talking to. No, of course, they engage with that person then.
Yeah.
And I've had situations where I'm like literally removed from the conversation.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's like, oh, the session starts.
Yeah.
We'll catch up later.
Yeah.
And that's what I find
but
frustrating.
Like, what's your level of reaching out to seniors? Because I do talk to them when I talk to them in a PDW or when I had a conversation at a doctoral consortium or something like that. Or I know that someone I am working with works with them. But I rarely approach someone where I don't even have a, like, let's say, leverageable connection.
I can't do that either. It has to be someone that I know what they're doing.
Okay.
And they've got like a clear kind of entry point. I think we mentioned that before as well, is I try when there's someone I really want to really arrange to talk to them somewhere.
Yeah.
Like when I need half an hour, there's no way you talk to someone half an hour. It's like a 5-minute thing at best.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my approach to it. But these spontaneous conversations with someone where you think, they don't work as expected. If you know that, for example, someone that you need to talk to, an editor, is at a, I don't know, at some event that you'll be at, and you're going to talk to this person, that tends to work out poorly. You can get maybe 2 sentences in, and if you're great, they may say, let's go and chat somewhere else. But at least at my stage, that doesn't tend to happen.
Yeah. And for me, this conference is more reaching out or talking to people I already know, had a conversation with. I bumped into a few people that I talked to, and it's nice to exchange again. So it's relationship building. But for me, it's hard to establish new ones. What helped a little bit were the receptions or the job talks where
people were
forced to talk to me. So, the one very interesting conversation with the senior there.
I think, but that's, for me, in receptions, a really like a lucky thing. Like, I don't know, to go into receptions with the goal of actually networking with people has never worked for me personally. Yeah. It's always been like lucky coincidences. Yeah. I'm at a reception, I have a beer in my hand, I'm standing somewhere, maybe someone pulls me in, or it's just like kind of standing next to somebody. But for me, because they're so loud and rowdy and a lot of people and they're like among friends,
yeah,
I find it hard to then use a reception to say, okay, I'm going to take my shot. Yeah. Here's this
I think
guy.
Receptions are great to talk to PhD students at other schools that you're generally interested in, or people who are just became assistant professors and they can share a little bit of how it is for them, or some requirements that are usually not accessible for tenure tracks and stuff like that. So for these kinds of information, I think it's very valuable. The receptions, at least. Seniors, I rarely see seniors at receptions, and if they're there, they're already drunk and with their friends, and this is not when I want to pitch my job market paper. Not because it might be the wrong time, but I think it's so annoying. I would hate it if I would be in their shoes, and I don't want to be a person that's hated for that.
Maybe the 25th PhD student in their first year that's going to pitch their idea. Yeah.
Rumbling, you know, like, my job market paper.
I want to study generative AI. Yes. I've got this great idea. Like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Oh, perfect. So in that direction, then, what aspects of conferences have gotten more important over time?
Yeah,
for you.
I think the contrast is quite crass for us because the COVID was in between, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we got to know many people through online conferences, consortia, or research days, and so on and so forth. And what really drastically changed for me is that I just go around and greet people, right? I have a lot of conversations, just bumping into people,
absolutely,
catching up again, and also meeting friends in a way. Like how important they are as co-authors or potential, I don't know, recommendation letter writers, I don't know. But it's just fun to see them again. And this changed a lot, yeah.
Exactly the same, I think. And it can be, I think it can't be overstated how useful it could be to just, without an agenda, to meet up with, wouldn't call them friends, but at least colleagues.
Yeah,
this is a
colleagues.
Great, this is a great situation. And to turn colleagues into friends, like there's people I only see at conferences, and then often through them, you may get into, like, usually you get into a larger group,
mm-hmm,
and then within that group, you know, there's probably a person that works at a place that you might want to work at.
Yeah.
So also for me, this has got much more important, is less the events, less the talks, less the topics. It's really more the social aspect of hanging out with. Important thing, I think, different people than you would at home.
Yeah.
Like I don't avoid my home colleagues.
I avoid you actively.
Yes, I know. I mean, you, obviously. This is
first time that we speak. It's not weird.
It's not even weird. That's not even awesome. But I do try when I get the chance to spend time with people I can spend time in Vienna, I do prioritize that. And also, this is something I did this time, is less like topic focused, going to listen to people,
mm-hmm,
but I had like two or three events where you had to submit something
early. Yeah, the same, the PDWs, right?
Yeah.
With the
and then you have round tables. Mm-hmm. That I've went to very little sessions and events, but the ones I did go to, I tried to have them where I actually had like one-to-one input.
Yeah.
And for me personally, this has gotten more important. And I think that only makes sense because as you move on, you've actually got projects you're working on that are in different stages.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes less about what's happening out there.
Yeah.
That's still to a degree, but it also then becomes a great place to actually get input that you can use versus on your project, not just like, okay, what's happening in AI?
Yeah.
What's happening in organizational behavior? What's happening in open innovation? Mm-hmm. Then what has gotten less relevant then? I mean, I think we guess we've touched upon that. For me, it's been the broad topic kind of sessions.
Yeah, I think what's more interesting to me are the meetings that are revolving around a specific literature stream where many people talk about what's interesting to them currently, what drives them, or how they perceive this theoretical threat in comparison to others and so on and so forth, because I think this gives a better feeling of where the field might be moving.
Mm-hmm.
What's really not too interesting to me are the paper presentations. I'm really sorry to all my colleagues, but it's just usually too random. If you have a specific paper that you want to see or someone to reach out to, go there. Or at least for me, I would go there, but I think I haven't seen a paper presentation yet.
And that points to my next question, because for me, so was the question next would be, what if you treat different conferences differently?
Yeah.
And this is exactly this. I think the main point for me is sometimes it's not paper presentations in total that are becoming less relevant. It's paper presentations on conferences like this.
True. Fully.
Like there's other conferences, smaller conferences, like one track conferences, yeah, where it's like all about the paper presentations.
Yeah.
You're there to listen to really selectively chosen papers with discussants,
yeah,
where you then engage on the papers, but not even the size. Like it's not necessarily because there's 10,000 people, but there's also smaller conferences. Like I'm going to pick on OUI again.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this just because it's multi-track.
Yeah.
And you want a lot of people submitting, and so you have a heterogeneous, you know, research paper. There, the research paper tracks are like you do your presentation. Mm. It's nearly just like the ticket to enter the conference,
yeah,
but it's,
yeah,
you don't get great feedback. You, yeah, it really depends. So if you're in a very specialized one track conference, then the paper presentations are the thing I'm there for. But in things where it's like this mix of topic discussions, editor meetings, socials, all that stuff, like the paper presentations really go down the hierarchy.
Yeah.
Is it similar for you with like different kinds of conferences?
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And I think a problem with this conference is that usually full papers are presented, right? So either it's the first version of a full paper, or it's already submitted in an A-plus journal and you don't know beforehand, right? So the variance in quality and stage is quite different, but everyone treats it as if it would be in the letter, right? That this is always done, already done. So critique is not really welcomed in a way.
Mm.
It's more like, just give me a tick and let me move on. And there's another conference for us, the Strategic Management Society annual meeting, where they actually call for proposals. These are advanced as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are submitted as well, true. But they are a little bit earlier stage and people have more of a feeling of, we're here to challenge each other and we're here to develop these papers a little bit more. And there the discussions are just different. Here I feel it's more, this is my stuff, please don't ask critical questions, and then go on to the next one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you get, and it, given that there's so many sessions here as well, as you might as well be, you might be in a room where it's just you and the presenters.
Yeah.
And it's like really.
Yeah, that's, I mean, come on.
It just sucks.
Yeah.
So if you go in with too many expectations on your own stuff as well. So it depends not just where I go to, but also how you treat your own presentation has like different levels. And so like looking ahead then, assuming that we'll still continue beyond our PhD, how do you think conferences will, like, will your priority shift further, or will other things become more relevant going forward?
I think what I kind of look forward to is more community crafting actively, right? So I think it's cool to organize PAWs, to create a community around the topic that you're in, embed yourself more there. I think the next step would be that we would start to organize events, right? I'm looking forward to that. I think this is fun. I think this is important. Helping junior scholars, or as I said, developing your own topic a little bit more by creating your own events. I think this will change. And this trajectory of meeting colleagues, friends, and so on and so forth will become more and more important, right? I met a few people. I saw them on the streets. I've never saw them in any session that I know is relevant to them. They're not here for that, right? They meet their friends. And when you're fast enough, you might be able to say hi, but they have their dinner tables, and this is what they're here for. And I think for us, it might become the same.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like actually not just passively consuming what is being advertised as your community, but actually actively crafting, you know, your own little part in this community, and maybe even having an influence on where it's moving and what becomes relevant. For me, it's not something I'm looking forward to, because I think I'm less couched in a very clear community yet. So I'm still kind of like, I don't know what I'll ever be, you know, can't even imagine what I'd be organizing. But I think that over time, just by default, at some point you'll feel like, hey, I'd like more people to talk about this, or I'd like to figure out how many people, you know, I could craft a community around this topic or approach or whatever. Yeah, so
I wouldn't underestimate these events that are more general on more general topics, for example, managing your dissertation or a junior scholar in TIM, or for example, technology innovation management, something like that. If you say I'm not embedded deeply in this theory, but rather I want to help the community. And I think this gives great visibility, right? If all the PhDs of one cohort know you as the guy who organized it, it helps you in the long run as well. And I think this is another way to go.
I also think what will happen is also so now we're in this middle. At first it was like, ooh, I need to talk to seniors to, you know, validate my idea or see if it's cool. Now we're in this kind of like, yeah, I mean, a little bit of, you know, senior chit-chat, co-author chit-chat, colleague chit-chat. I think it'll become more relevant to actually getting conversations with editors. Mm-hmm. Then like this will be, it'll then jump again. I feel like when you're not just having your one project, but you have multiple projects in different stages, and maybe even under review, to really once again make a shift more to strategic meetings and try to actively engage people that have decision power at journals and talk to them.
Yeah,
that's one thing I can also see happening.
Yeah,
it becomes more salient, more important to really have a chat beforehand before you decide to submit something, once you realize that that's so important.
And I want to stress this a little bit more, because learnings derived from the process of submitting, reviewing from the author perspective is very valuable. But the other perspective of what is an editor looking for is really, really helpful and needs to be learned as well, right?
Absolutely.
In conversations with them. And it cannot be bridged just by submitting and trying to figure that out, but rather listening to them, having conversations. Where do they want to move the journal? What, as I said, what are they actually looking for? So that's something that I just learned like in the last year, that this is important. I thought it can just be learned by submitting.
Yeah, I thought it's totally like, you just, what is it? You submit something and if it's good, it'll get through. But no, actually, like it's good. It's not an objective metric. It depends on who's the editor and what they think and what they think is important. And for good journals, it's only fair that you say, well, honestly, our bar, like our entry requirement, our consideration requirement is great.
Yeah.
So that's just like table stakes.
Yeah.
Then you need to figure out, okay, is this a topic that's, or a methodology or a theory, you know, where there is a spark of interest, or is it more like, this is, you know, as me as a senior editor, you know, I'm looking more for in that direction. Or I think all these, this is a learning that I think will become more and more relevant to figure out where the best.
And also being able to tailor papers towards actual editors, right?
Yeah.
That you know, I kind of want to target him or her.
Yeah.
I think they would like that. And also making that clear when you write the many journals are open to that, right? To suggest an action editor.
I only know journals where you have to actually choose your editors.
Okay. Yeah. I think you can in not many of ours, but it's not necessary.
I've done a huge experience, but the ones that I looked at, it's very much kind of choose your editorial team. And then
it's weird as well, right? I mean, come on. It's your job.
Tell us your friends.
Yeah. Yes, tell us your friends. Yeah. Who do you know?
So yeah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of not blind anyway.
Yeah,
so no. But that's the whole thing. But I mean, any last part? How's it been? What's the annual
annual review? I really enjoyed it, actually. Okay. To be frank, I really enjoyed it. It's interesting to be semi in the job market. I got the question whether I'm only targeting European schools, and then I said yes, and someone said, okay. Yeah, that's a different context. I don't know. So I don't feel like I'm having the full job market perspective, because the American job market, or the people that are on the American job market, I think for them this conference is even more important. Like I had a few interviews, but it's not even, they are, I don't know how they call it. I think non-mandatory interviews or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's not even an official step. It's just it's just saying hi. So I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I've heard. I mean, it's super. I think it. From the job market perspective, what I heard, and that's just anecdotal stuff, and it's super heterogeneous from uni to uni, but it's nearly like, I heard people tell me getting an AOM interview for certain universities isn't even that great of a signal. It's like,
oh, interesting.
It's like,
they want to figure out if they really don't want to invite you.
I don't know if this was just like some cynical comment by somebody.
It doesn't.
but what I heard is like, AOM interviews for some can be the pile of people that lie between definitely not and
probably not.
And then it's like this, okay, let's, you know, they're not definitely not, but they're actually an probably not. So we'll invite them to an AM interview versus the ones which is like probably yes.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, do a proper application kind of situation.
And I mean, flyouts are costly and maybe people are co-authors with people that are known and so on.
I think that's super, it depends. It's probably from university to your university, they take a different perspective. Job market, how frothy is it? How many applications are there? I can see an AOM being super important in a situation where you there's less demand, and then really, really important if there's not at all important when there's like a ton of jobs. Other way around, when there's very little jobs and a lot of
I think labor. Why they can still be worthwhile is that you get more information about what they look for, right? So I had one conversation. It was the reception, a candidate reception, and they made clear that they're looking for this kind of teaching, right? So you can craft your application more in the direction, I have experience in that field, I can teach this kind of topic. So for that, it's quite helpful, because this is unknown before, right? They don't write that in.
That's true. Our episode today has a sponsor, and this sponsor is Pickup Trucks. Doesn't really matter. It's Pickup Trucks in the city in particular. And for it's just a very simple question, what possibly can justify that 30% of Boston population needs a vehicle that is meant to transport dead cows across Texas? I just don't understand why there's so many here. And just don't understand. It's like, how small must your ego be that you just feel the need to be responsible for a three times a increase in deaths of infants, just so you can, I don't know, transport your shopping a little bit easier. There's so many here.
It's crazy. They're so fucking big. It's enormous.
If you've never been to the US and you only think, like, if you've only seen pickup trucks in TV, they're three times the size. It's stupid. Like, some of them, what's the bonnet? It gets your head.
Yes.
That's the kind of size. And then there's just like people driving around the city in them here.
The blind spot is a football field.
Yeah. You can just completely mow over a group of school children and you wouldn't even notice. You'd be just smooth cruising, which basically just means if I ever can afford one, I'll definitely get one. So yes, this episode has been brought to you by pickup trucks in the city, especially in Boston.
Great.
And in conclusion, you're very excited to hear how many Philips are registered at AOM.
Yes. 300 was a little bit too much.
That was a little bit too much, and I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to trust the AOM app when I filter for Philips.
Did you look for every possible permutation of the word, of the name?
No, I chose your spelling.
okay, interesting.
Okay, revise your estimate.
It ends maybe 8, because this is a 8? Very German version of spelling it.
Okay, so if it, no, then you're closer, it's 16.
16, okay.
Yeah. And that's really first name Philips. So there was like James name, Philip or something or with an S at the end that was included. So there's all in all, there's 16 Philips and 23 Alexanders registered at the AOM. And with that,
none of them the great.
No, there's only one great one. And with that, before you log off, I'll go through the credits, and then after this, there'll be a short section where you'll get actual useful input from senior, well-informed individuals. From once again, Frank Nagel, Gordon Birch, and from Imke Reimers, who were gracious enough to take part in our little podcast again. But on closing words. What do we see? I don't know my script. This has been produced.
Prison Break.
Prison Break. This has been produced by me,
Thank
Alexander Schnaum.
The BU team.
Yeah, for the
follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and TikTok
and Twitter.
Twitter is it still?
It's still happening.
I deleted the app.
Sorry. Oh yeah, follow us on X or whatever whatever you do on X now. Of course, please, if you want to have us continue doing what we're doing, leave us a review wherever you want, optimally Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, and ask for resubmissions.
And if you see us at the conference or somewhere else, say hi. And yes, that's all from my side and all from Philip's side.
Bye.
And we'll be handing over to people that actually know what they're talking about. Bye-bye. Ciao, ciao. Thanks very much for agreeing to be part of a little podcast family. So first of all, why don't you briefly introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm Imke Reimers. I'm as of a few weeks ago, an associate professor of economics and strategy at Cornell University. And yeah, I'm an economist mostly working on digital markets.
I'm Frank Nagel. I'm an assistant professor at Harvard Business School in the strategy unit. And it's great to be here again.
I'm Gord Birch. I'm an associate professor at the Questrom School of Business at Boston University. I'm the Kelly Questrom Associate Professor in Management there.
Thanks very much. I'll get straight to it. And the question burning on our listeners' minds, of course, is what are some of the key mistakes you see junior scholars or grad students make when it comes to academic conferences in general, attendance or the perspective they have on it?
So actually, I see a lot of junior people coming to conferences, and I think that's great, right? And I think, I mean, maybe one thing that I would advise people not to do is talk a lot amongst yourselves, but rather just, you know, feel free to come up to talk to slightly more senior people. One thing that I like that sometimes, you know, that I've sometimes see people do is like they like just go to the senior people and like just go ahead and say, oh, let me tell you about all of my amazing work or something. I've never done that. I happen to sit at a table with senior people, and you know, when they've asked me about my research, I would tell them something about it, but I was never very forthright and forthcoming with it. And I think that might have worked well, but it's a really like it's a very fine line to walk.
Okay, so like the opposite of what I did today.
No, this is great because we actually barely talked about your work, so that was wonderful.
So you know, I think it's always a learning process, and you learn how to conference better as you have more experience. But certainly, you know, thinking about the way you're balancing your time between actually attending presentations, and which is important, and to learn what people are working on, and so hopefully see good examples of good research, but also spending time, you know, talking with folks, and that can be friends or people that, you know, maybe reviewers or editors down the line, or if you're on the job market, certainly potential employers. And I think one of the things that, you know, folks misunderstand is that, like, usually most faculty like talking to doctoral students, and you know, the luminaries in the field may be very busy and may be harder to talk to them, but certainly you know, the younger professors and the less well established folks are usually more than happy to talk to doctoral students and learn about what they're working on and you know, offer help when they can, right? So it's a small world, and you know, it's good to get to know people.
I think the first thing I would say is a relatively obvious point that you should submit and participate in conferences. I know that sounds a little obvious, but the reality is, as an editor at journals, I often encounter papers where I get the clear sense the paper has never been presented somewhere before.
Okay.
When you're junior, the easiest way to get an opportunity to present is conferences. It's harder to get invites, right, for seminars. So number one is make sure you do that before you send a paper to get iron out obvious kinks and things like that. And part of that leads to my second point. When you are attending a conference, don't just present and then walk away. Make a point of connecting with people in the room, especially senior scholars. You get a lot of useful things from that. So one is they get to know who you are, obviously, so the network piece. The second thing is you can get a better sense from a one-on-one conversation than you can from an open response in the room, somebody putting their hand up. People often are more comfortable sharing their true thoughts in a confined space with a few people around, or even just the two of you, right? So you'll get more honest feedback that way. You'll get more attention from them. They'll be more thoughtful in the things they tell you in terms of how to take a paper forward. And obviously you build better relationships with people in small settings. So I would really encourage junior scholars following a presentation, track down the person in the room that raised their hand, and also the one that was paying attention but didn't raise their hands.
Yeah.
A nice thing about being junior is that you have a very open invitation to talk to very senior people, because most senior people are pretty pro-social. They want to help students develop and become good scholars. It's a bit different than talking to another faculty member who's already very successful and maybe you don't like them or something, right? Most people will be receptive to talking to a junior person, so you should really take advantage of it.
So about the approaching part, because that's what's interesting, is it, in your opinion, something that has to be prepared beforehand, or would you be like willing to talk to someone that just shows up after a presentation and talks to you?
I don't think it's anything you can really strategize too much. Mm-hmm. I think you should be comfortable kind of approaching someone, thanking them for coming to your talk, getting a quick reaction. Mm-hmm. Maybe they won't have a quick reaction because they may want to be more thoughtful in what they say, but maybe they'll offer, you know, you can communicate with them as a follow-up to get more thoughts from them.
Okay, great advice. I think something that we might have touched upon in the past as well, so it's great to hear that confirmed as well. And then another brief one would just be out of interest is, like, what are some of the things you had to learn the hard way as a grad student, if you still, if you have not repressed those memories already?
Yeah, exactly. I remember nothing that was hard. No, I think, I mean, what I struggled the most with as a grad student was really just like taking the plunge, right? Actually deciding, okay, I'm just going to try to work on this. I think I just kind of dabbled in the, you know, in the waiting pool for a good year or so. And I, like, my advisor kept saying, you know, and you still refuse to work on a model. And I was like, yeah, I refuse to work on a model because I don't know how to do them. And like, I just had no idea what to do. And so I think that was something where, like, eventually when I finally decided, okay, wait, now let me just do something that actually moves me forward rather than just, you know, dabbling and staying busy. That was really useful. But I'm not sure that I was really learning it the hard way. It was just taking a long time to finally understand that I had to do, like, that I actually had to do something.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I mean, it at least resonates with us as well, which have spent, I think, all of us collectively way too many years in the beginning not getting the thing done. So, thanks so much for these great tidbits. And thank you very much for taking the time.
Yeah, no, thanks for doing this. Cool.
Sure. So I think this actually builds on that first question. And one of the things that I did not understand as a grad student, but only learned through going through the process of publishing papers, but don't think of editors as kind of, you know, the only way you can communicate with them is kind of the formal submission and the formal cover letter and the formal response document. Editors often are more than willing to at least email a little bit if you have confusion about, you know, some R&R or something, or what the feedback was, or how best to deal with it. You know, think of it more as a conversation as opposed to a very formal, you know, you're only allowed to communicate with the editor through the formal kind of channels, right? And so I think that's something that I definitely did not understand as a grad student, but has become clearer, you know, as I've gone through the review process many times, is that, you know, editors are happy to, most of them, again, you know, everybody's different, but happy to chat and help you better understand what, you know, the reviewers are asking you to do and to help you out to, you know, get things through the pipeline and actually get them published.
Be careful how you phrase your responses to people's questions. things can get lost in translation. I personally have had experiences where I thought my presentation went quite well, and the presentation piece may have, but the way I handled questions afterwards, I got indirect feedback from other faculty when I was a PhD student that maybe I was a little too curt in my response.
Okay.
And people have personalities, they get offended. I didn't mean anything by it. I actually had to run to the airport in that particular instance, and I was late, so I had a good reason for it, but they didn't know that. And so just be attentive to social considerations. So just be thoughtful that this person's going to have an impression they form based on what you say. And so try to be, you know, courteous, even if you're in a rush.
Okay, so the thank you for your great question, great comment, thanks so much is
adage, actually. Even if you don't believe it, you should generally always try to say it, because it's usually coming from a good place. It's constructive when people make comments.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Thanks for your time. And yeah, thanks so much for participating.
Yeah, you're welcome. Happy to.
Okay, das heißt, ich bin dann schön in L.A. mit irgendeiner Krankheit.
Oh ja, in L.A.?
Ja, wir fliegen dann nach L.A.
Ach so, du, okay. Ja. Ich halte ein bisschen Abstand.
Ich muss noch auf dem Writer's Strike mit Maschinen.
Ja, ja, genau. Die haben mich angerufen, dass du jetzt die Sachen übernimmst.
Und ich so, nee, ich will auch nicht
mehr schreiben. Hast du nicht die letzte Staffel von Game of Thrones geschrieben?
Ja. Ja, circa. So könnte man mein Working Paper, mein Job Market Paper.
Die letzte Staffel von Game of Thrones.
Deswegen habe ich jetzt einen Postdoc.